What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
What's up, y'all? Dr. T. Hassan Johnson. You know, since the 1980s, I've really been, and it was much more subtle then, it really started to kick up in the 90s, but I've really been seeing these, you know, constant attempts that I think mostly by feminists to keep reframing masculinity. And really what it comes down to almost, in, you know, repetitively and predictably, is to have men in some way emulating women. It's never about when they start new programs to help boys or when they develop new workshops to work through how to manage a relationship or how to raise kids. It usually comes down to some type of mirroring or mimicry of women. And that's supposed to, and they even do this with little boys sometimes, right? You know, the idea that somehow when boys dress or act like girls, that this is somehow revolutionary, right? This is some breakthrough in masculinity. And they've been doing this for the longest, and we're still seeing it today. So this is actor Taye Diggs, who, you know, is out here showing up in a dress or a skirt, you know, with his suit and his dress shoes. And, you know, he's posing as if this is the thing. And the subtext to this, when I posted this on X, was that this was framed as the new masculinity, right? This is what masculinity is now. It's this kind of merging with what, you know, the outer trappings of femininity. And for some young men who've been socialized into this, you know, for years, what I'm hearing them say is, well, it's just a piece of fabric. What's the problem, right? And for men, particularly heterosexual men, this is hardly an ideal. I mean, now I don't, you know, you don't have to get into calling anybody derogatory names or any of that kind of stuff. We don't have to go there. It, you know, I think for many men, it's simply no, thank you. This is not the masculinity that we represent. It's not the masculinity we're interested in. We don't need to emulate women in order for us to be able to reframe masculinity. I don't need to. And this is something I've been seeing, you know, especially since graduate school, when it comes to dealing with gender at all. You know, even conceptually, where you're not talking about clothing, you're not talking about which toys people are, you know, kids are playing with, or what kind of people date. We don't have to go through any of that. Even conceptually, at the academic level, you had to employ feminist talking points and concepts to be considered or taken seriously in regard to gender, right? Because the view was, and this is definitely something both Tommy Curry and myself, Dr. Ronald Neal, and others who are doing black male studies, what we often heard was that there was nothing new to be said or learned about heterosexual black men, right? The idea was that men had nothing to contribute. There was nothing new to learn. And feminists are, you know, feminism was where you had to go, particularly black feminism, to be on the cutting edge of gender analysis, right? But as it related to men, what it meant was in order to be part of the cutting edge, to have a discourse about black manhood, somehow it had to emulate femininity and womanhood to be considered cutting edge, right? So there's no other definition. And I, you know, fundamentally, I think that's a flawed conclusion, but I do think it is a very popular subtext that isn't often stated aloud, but it's kind of a social expectation, particularly in academic spaces and in Hollywood and in media. I think we've seen this play out again and again, sometimes in very subtle ways. But the idea is that we have to emulate women in order for us to be taken seriously on this topic of gender. Because in many respects, gender analysis has been synonymous with women, womanhood, femininity, and feminism for decades. And it's understandable because women, for the most part, started the discourse and popularized it from the 1960s forward. I understand, you know, to some extent why this was done. But to actually, you know, be heterosexual and be interested in gender topics as it relates to heterosexual men, that was considered a problem from the get-go. And if you even as a student in a women's studies class, taking that position would threaten your GPA. But to take it further into professional academic work, into, you know, graduate school analysis for that matter, it's a problem. And it marks you as a problem. In order to be fully accepted, you either have to conceptually do what Taye Diggs is doing, or you have to literally do what Taye Diggs is doing. And I, for one, find it problematic, linear, limited, and predictable, if anything. And ultimately, I think it's still, in many respects, a form of arrogance. I mean, I've argued this with the LGBT community as a whole. I think part of why feminism and women have been so accepting of it is because it's mirrored femininity back to them. It's a kind of self-absorption unto itself, right? Whether you're talking about gay men or trans women, it usually is some type of mirroring of femininity, right? A pedestalizing of femininity. Matter of fact, you know, watching some of the films in the 90s where you always kind of saw, yeah, black films, mind you, right? These were usually dramedies, right? Because black folk had to throw everything into one movie because we didn't know when we were going to get a chance to make another. But you'd watch these movies, and especially if they were female-led films, you know, you go back and you watch them, and eventually they always would end up in the hair salon. And in the hair salon, they always had one gay man. But it was never one of those kind of gay brothers that, you know, for the most part, doesn't demonstrate the stereotypically, you know, practiced kind of markers of homosexuality. He was just a regular brother who happened to date brothers. You rarely see that in those kind of films. What you would always see is somebody who's highly dramatic and flamboyant, acting like the most stereotypical female that you'll find in any of those movies. There's a reason that those things happen. And there's a reason, I think, that feminism really, you know, took in the LGBT framework and helped to kind of launch it in many respects, because it was always reflective of the feminine idea. And in the black community, of course, reflective of the black feminine idea, right? And so I think that's kind of what this is here too. He's not only looking to be taken seriously, he's not only letting people know he's ready to work, hire me for projects, especially projects that require some type of gender bending, but also as a nod to feminization, to women in the industry, letting them know that he honors them, he pedestalizes them to some extent, and seeks to emulate them. And this is how you advance. You advance by demonstrating, you kissing the ring, bending the knee, and demonstrating to women in positions of authority that you are ready to play the game. And that's how I see this mess. So I, for one, do not abide by it. I think there are alternative ways that men should approach this and can approach this and have been approaching this. And I just don't think that those ways need to be played down because men are not necessarily willing to gender flex to this degree. All right. Peace.
And welcome to another edition of Office Hours. That's right. We had to drop the bomb on that one. Welcome to another edition of Office Hours, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And the fuck? Man, I got these kittens, man, and they get hair all over the place. So if you see me, you know, doing anything wild, or you hear me doing anything wild on here, just know, you know what I'm saying? That's why it's going down like that, unfortunately. But anyway, welcome. And as, you know, Sonny said from Bronx Tale, you're here now, and you know, hold on, you just can't leave. That's right, we got the clips locked and loaded, so anybody goes near that door, it's going down. So So, you know, and we're rocking live here on Philly Fridays, here on FetLife Station, FetLifeStation.com. And you can also catch us on all of your podcast applications. All you have to do is look at the True Stories Podcast Network. Look for the True Stories Podcast Network. And you can check us out. I know my brothers like to find me on Spotify. You know, the brothers like to check out Spotify and check me out. And speaking of the brothers, man, you know, I'm not doing this thing tonight by myself. Well, today, well, you know, I'm recording tonight. But anyway, I'm not doing this by myself. So, you know, as y'all know, I am an advocate for brothers. I'm an advocate for masculinity, manhood, and things of that nature, specifically in our community. And so one of the things that I want to talk about tonight, or, you know, when y'all catch this, is, you know, what's the scale and scope of masculinity and as it refers to men, specifically black men? I'm a black man here in America, the Western Hemisphere. And how should we approach that? Because as you just heard from that clip, there was so many different things that are being attached to manhood right now. And most definitely, a lot of people are defining manhood who aren't quote unquote men. You always hear the terminology, what a real man is and what a real man does. Very rarely is that from a person that's actually a real man, as that can be self-defined, or a person that's actually been in the environment with a real man. So, as y'all know, if you checked out earlier, like I always tell y'all, make sure you go to On the Shoulders of Giants channel. I got my good brothers, Joseph Ward and Patrick Irvin, in the building. You know what I'm saying? Y'all already know. Y'all already know it's about to go down. All right? And we're about to have this conversation about masculine man, because we have these conversations all the time. And so, you know, introducing, you know, authors. These brothers have been in documentaries. And, you know, we specifically talk about issues concerning the black community, be in America. Sometimes we talk internationally, but specifically in America. So I want y'all to welcome to the stage my good brothers, Joseph Ward and Patrick Irvin. What's going on, brothers? How y'all doing?
Yo, Hughes can't leave.
Hughes can't leave. I love that clip, man. I'm telling you, man. I love that clip.
The fear in their eyes, like everything changed. They just knew it was over.
Bruh, it's wild turkey, right? And this is why, you know, I want to talk about that, because even in that film, The Bronx Tale, you got to see different concepts of what was identified as masculinity through that whole movie, right? And how is it that every time we have a black movie, we all, not even black movie, but black media representation of the black male image, there's always something sprinkled in that that bends the whole concept, as Dr. Tiasan Johnson said, that bends the whole notion of what manhood is. Joe, I'm gonna start with you, then I'm gonna come to you, Pat. Just what do y'all think about this? And then afterwards, we're just gonna have a free flowing conversation. What do you think? Why do you think that is, Joe?
Well, I think that we have always lived in a society where black men were never in a position to define what black masculinity was, first and foremost. And then I think, second of all, black men never decided to take that next step in mass to define what black masculinity is. And there's too many henpecked men out there who are comfortable with everybody else, especially our women, defining what black masculinity is, defining what masculinity is as a whole, defining what we're supposed to be. And you know, we talk about it a lot. The simps and the lames do mess the game up. And we also have a lot of men who are quiet as well. And so we're not taking the mantle or even taking the initiative to define ourselves, and the women don't mind just going along with it and just doing what they do, because, you know, like we've talked in the past, they have, or they even feel like they're in a position of power. Even it may be pseudo power or whatever, but from whatever position that they're in, it makes them feel powerful, and nobody's going to give up their position of power. Nobody's going to hand that over just willingly because black men ask it. So with that being said, they're going to continue doing what they do, how they do, because everything benefits them, especially the ones who are out for self. Everything benefits them, so why would they give that up? And at the same time, we have too many black men who are co-signing what they have going on, and then you have us, the minority, in the corner like, hell no, nah, we ain't doing none of that. And then, you know, they're looking at us like we crazy because we ain't falling in line, but we like, you're right, we're not falling in line because your brand of masculinity does not help us. Look at where we are. Your brand of masculinity is comfortable for you because it validates all of the craziness that's going on, and it doesn't hold anything in check. And that's, to me, is one of the main problems. But I'll stop right there.
I appreciate that. Appreciate that, brother. You already know, man. You already know how it's going to come off, man. You know, hey.
I'm done. I'm done with life. And it's all Jermaine's fault. It's always Jermaine's fault. I'm done.
Hey, Pat, what say you, brother? What say you about this whole topic?
Why? Could you refresh my memory? I got caught up listening to Joe. What's the question?
Nah, just like with all, everybody else defining what manhood is, it seemed like the people that define manhood never, or masculinity and manhood, have, they're not truly representation. They're not the representatives of it. So, you know, why is it that people always seem like they want to, you know, have, like I said, as Dr. Tiasan said, gender bending, you know, experiences when it comes to black manhood and masculinity and so forth.
Okay, I wanted to make sure I was answering the actual question and not, you know, responding to a thought I had while listening to Joe. But I do agree with Joe. I think black men, and we'll start by saying something we've been saying a lot lately. Manhood needs to, that label needs to be gatekept. And black men have not stepped forward to define the term. We've allowed adult males and women to define the term for us. And then we've just kind of gone along with that definition, much to our own detriment and the detriment of the community. And I think a lot of that has been rooted in the lack of... We're in an era now where black men, manhood in general, is kind of quiet. It's something that happens. We talk about it all the time. A lot of the energy that men put forth, it's not loud. It's not in your face. It's quiet. It's reserved. But it's strong. It's the backbone. You build with it. You build off it. And we're in an era now where if something's not loud and in your face, it doesn't get any attention. It's ignored. And so I think that has become much to the detriment of black manhood, manhood in general. How do we define these terms? What makes a man a man? A lot of previous generations has been that quiet, reserved, responsibility, accountability, you know, just deal with whatever life throws at you for the benefit of your family and the community at large. But now with everybody yelling and screaming, nobody's paying attention to that core structure holding the whole building up. Nobody's noticing that beam in the middle of the room that's keeping the room from collapsing on itself. Everybody is instead looking at the walls that are screaming and cracking, and looking at the floor that's screaming and cracking, and even looking at the ceiling that is getting ready to fall down, and not paying attention to the fact that this beam is what's holding all of this together, but this beam is also giving up. And so it's kind of become one of those things where we respect the Beam for being the Beam, but we don't want the Beam to be anything else right now. Like, we just need the Beam to shut the fuck up while we deal with all of this other shit. And then we'll come back to the Beam later. That's the promise they give us. Now, we know the reality of that promise is that it's a broken promise the moment it's made, but that's still the promise that's given. So I think everything we're seeing now is kind of the light of that promise. Like, because even when you press them on, why do y'all give such negative portrayals of masculinity? That's, well, we're not talking about all men. We're talking about the bad ones. Well, that, yet again, that's putting more focus on the negatives, all of the things going wrong, and not really paying attention to that Beam in the middle of the room holding everything up. So those are my thoughts without trying too much to parrot exactly what Joe just said, because I agree with a lot of what Joe just said.
Nah, I agree with both of you just said. And I think that you said it rightly and just that it's something that needs to be gatekept. Because what I'm seeing now is everybody, you know, when we start talking and we have these conversations, and y'all know we've had these conversations in other places, the three of us. And one of the things I realize is everybody wants to sort of create a notion of manhood that includes them in it. When you specifically when you're talking about black males, right? They all, you know, everybody wants to, like, they don't want to not be identified as a man or not want to be identified as masculine. And so when you start talking about masculinity, that's when you start hearing all these diversified, you know, words or diversified terms in terms of what masculinity could be. But we don't see that anywhere else in the world. We only see it when it comes to black men, specifically black men in America. And I have a notion about that, but I want to hear from y'all. Why do y'all think that there's such such a strong push to experiment? You know, like, the why? Why do you think people are comfortable doing that?
Because who's going to stop them? What if we've done to set up safeguards or put or show any kind of strength as a group of men or a group of males trying to be men or whatever to say that no, nobody's going to define us but us? We let it happen. We, like, the podcast I just got through doing today, men sign up to engage in conversations about men that are framed by women. We let it happen. Too many black males and not enough black men. And because of that dynamic, everybody can define who we are for us, except for us.
Well, I think it goes to, we talked about it before, the Survivor episode, where the men versus women's joint, where the beta males will always come into contract. And, you know, we're using better lightly, but loosely. But those men that are not necessarily high on the hierarchical structure of manhood, they're always going to form an alliance with women in order to benefit women so that they can gain access to women. Because that's the only leverage, that's the only way they have to gain access to women. And at the end of the day, for a lot of those men, like, I think a lot of this is biological. They want to spread their seed. They want to procreate. They want to build a legacy. And they can't think of any other way to do that other than getting with a woman. So I think every hero needs a villain. And if black women have been the heroes since the 1980s and 90s, then the perfect villain for them is not white men, it's black men. They're direct counterpart. So I think it becomes a bit poetic, in a sense, to say that a lot of the things that we're seeing said, to have a lot of the things that are happening happen. It fits with the narrative. It fits with the story. It's a wonderful story. That the man that was trapped in the house with the woman is not actually her protector, but is her oppressor. And then we also know when you start talking about defending masculinity, you're talking about defending it from narratives. And in my opinion, that is the role of the woman. Men defend women from physical harm. Women defend men from social harm. Narrative harm. Things of that nature. Innuendos, propaganda. We've heard it all before. Well, our defenders, in a lot of ways, have chosen to engage in the harm itself. So who protects the child when the child's parents have turned on the child? Nobody. You used to tell kids all the time, even my kids, I can defend you from the world, but nobody in the world can defend you from me. And in the community, we had the same thing going on. We could defend each other from the world, but nobody in the world can or will defend us from each other. Well, black males have done a good job at protecting black women from physical harm, which is why they feel invulnerable. Black women have not done a good job of defending black men from innuendo, propaganda, and social harm, which is why we're the butt of everybody's joke and the villain of everybody's movie.
And you know, the irony behind that is respect for men only goes as far as the women that belong with those men, the women of that particular group. And when you look globally at the, like, because you'll hear women, like, our women will say things like, and I'm using our loosely, because when you talk to most sisters, they don't think they belong to any group of men, right? Definitely not black men. So, and I'm talking about the majority, you know, if you really sit down and talk to them, not just, you know, not just what sounds good on paper, but when you actually listen to what they describe, right? A lot of what I hear, and y'all can correct me about this if I'm wrong, but a lot of times it's like they feel as though they capitalize off of destroying our image. They'll use terms and all these qualifications that we'd have to use and become to sort of like be the perfect man or whatever, or a high quality man, right? They want to all, now they, since Kevin Samuels, everybody wants a high value man. Go figure. But the notion behind it is, even when men do all those things, even when the brothers do all those things, they still, well, there's still sometimes many cases where he did everything. He did this, he did that, you know, provider and protector, this, that, and the other. I never had a want that I didn't get need. A want that it went unattended. But damn, I'm just not feeling him right now. The infamous we grew apart statement. So that definitely plays into the destruction, right, or the demolition, or the continued demolition, onslaught of our public image. What is it? Because we often talk about things that are within our control, because, you know, the women don't really answer to us no more. I don't think they ever did. And you can go back to the Staples. You can go back to the plantation. The women in the black community never answered to the black men, right? From the first onset, in terms of coming in contact with those who colonized, the Europeans that colonized this particular piece of land, that's never been the case. Black men have never been the leaders of the black household. What is it going to take for us to assert ourselves in that regard, and not just the leaders of our household? As you know, when we talk about manhood, We implement things. We talk. We don't just talk about the ability to spread your seed. We don't just talk about the ability to procreate or to sleep with as many women, be promiscuous. When we talk about manhood, we talk about, you know, standing on values, right? Integrity, being responsible, you know, self-respect, and being honorable, especially honorable amongst each other, right? What will it take for us to be the ones who actually step in and reframe our image? Just not just here in this particular piece of land, but internationally, globally speaking.
To reclaim our image?
I wouldn't even say reclaim it. I would say to claim it, because I'm not sure if we've ever had that.
Well, black men or black males are going to have to... We're going to have to create as many black men as possible. But then, well, how do groups of people gain power? Because at some point, some type of confrontation is going to have to happen. If we're talking about taking power, taking position. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be a physical confrontation, but at some point, if black men are going to claim anything, some type of confrontation is going to have to happen. And we're going to have to be willing to engage in that type of confrontation.
Okay.
Well, black men are, we got two wars we got to fight. And we got to pick who we going to fight first.
Yep.
First, we have to go to war with black males, and then we have to go to war with black women. Those two wars are unavoidable.
Yep.
Now, after we deal with those wars or get dealt with in those wars, provided we survive, then we can go about the process of, like Joe said, that other part of building power. But those two confrontations, I agree with them. Confrontation is a must when it comes to acquiring power. Once you acquire some semblance of power, you can leverage that and build more power through other means. But confrontation has to start when you have no power to begin with. You have to have some sort of confrontation to get it. And those are the two groups of people that we have an unavoidable pathway to power. We gotta go through those two. It's unavoidable. The black males will continue to usurp whatever we try to build and be allies to those that would do us harm. And I agree with you, PC. I think black women have never in mass anyways decided that they were going to be underneath the banner of black men. And they've never had to, even on the plantation. So there are those black women out there that would like to be under the, and don't mind being under the banner of black male leadership. The problem there is they aren't controlling or shaping any narratives.
Right.
So they're not even the group that we will go to war with. We will go to war with the narrative. But as we battle the narrative, we would in fact be battling black women. So, but I think black men have got it. We've got really two choices. We go to war or we accept. If we go to war, we got a few more choices. Who do we battle first? Those are strategic decisions. If we choose to accept it, then we accept it and we acknowledge that none of these conversations matter anyways outside of intellectual stimulation or intellectual masturbation. And then we move forward from there. With, I think, though, with the way black manhood has been positioned and progressing, I honestly believe there is a level of acceptance that is being set in. And I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that at the moment. But I do know that black men are not going to go to war with black women. And I don't think black men have been waging a silent war against black males for the last few decades unsuccessfully without even being recognized for the fact that we're waging this war against them. So that even that kind of answers the question of who do we battle first, because there's a never-ending supply of black males, and it's very easy for women to put a battery in their back. So, I mean, and we're not, like I said, I don't believe we're going to go to war with black women, but I believe we need to go to war with the narratives that are propagated by black women.
You know we ain't going to war with black women. We're not. Not enough. It's not enough black men existing, so that's not going to happen. Like you said, because I've seen a number of videos of men, you know, verbally stating, we got to go to war against the simps. We got to go to war against the simps. But when would that physical confrontation happen? You know, I don't know. But I do agree, like, I don't think it's enough men who get it, who are willing to have some type of confrontation with black women.
Well, I think another part of that, too, is who props up the simps and black women. Because they have a supporting cast. Right now, they're kind of losing it. You know, with this new wave and a new economy, you know. But let's be clear, you know, feminism is just one wing of the bird of white supremacy. And when we talk about white supremacy, we're talking specifically white men and white women who individually and collaborate and collectively push the narrative to empower the black male, I mean the emasculated black male and black women in regards to, you know, creating and maintaining this particular structure where we are sitting here fighting for our image, fighting for our own valor. And like you said, you know, there's few, because although, and I know we have a lot of brothers who are part of the manosphere. We have a lot of brothers who are red pill, but not nearly as many as we have who have been born and bred and sort of have an epigenetic memory that leads us into falling into line when it comes to aiding what's been described is you know, being a supporting cast to the women in our community, which by its own definition extrapolates the masculinity from the whole conversation of whether or not we could pursue manhood. Because when you hear men talk, well, you hear a lot of the males, well, the brothers talk, some of the males, a lot of what I hear is what they can do to acquiesce to what they mean to women. And that's how they describe their manhood and masculinity, is what they can do for women, what they can provide for women. They don't really talk about some of the things we talk about.
Well, no, and they don't know how. It's not in their programming. I mean, like I said, there's been a war raging against simps for the better part of the last 30, 40 years. And it hasn't worked, because at the end of the day, women can produce an endless supply of them, because they can self-replicate, and they do. So the driving force for a simp is pussy, and women know this, men know this. So if women can just have endless children and teach their sons that their sole purpose in life is to be of utility for women, well, there's your driving force. That's your simp making factory right there. The programming and the physical structure of it is right there in front of you. So, and there aren't enough men, even in the manosphere spaces. half of the dudes in the manosphere are angry simps.
Yep.
Like, that's what's there now.
Angry late.
You know?
Yep.
Right, like, they're upset. A lot of those dudes aren't men. Not what I would define as a man. They're mad at the world, at a girl, at whatever. And I'm not even saying they're wrong for being mad, because some of them have truly been hurt. And I'm not going to play this game of who hurt you. You know, because that person was hurt. Instead of asking who hurt you, why do we have a system that's hurting so many people that they're turning out this way? It's like going into a community that is struggling with gang violence and asking somebody that just got shot as they complain about it. Yo, like, you know, asking somebody complaining about the gang violence, who shot you? Hey, what? What do you mean?
Who hurt you?
But that's what... But it's like, what are you talking about? How is that a valid response to the pain that's been inflicted on me, regardless of how I spit it out? So I'm not going to say that, but I am going to say a lot of those dudes are the men we need, because they haven't gotten over the hurt. And if a girl came and smiled at them tomorrow and gave them a hug, they would be 100% off the red pill and back onto the blue one.
Yeah.
So.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So, like, no. We talking. I mean, but that's what we're dealing with. So, I don't see a world where it's not enough men doing what need to be done in order to change things on a larger scale, because even the men, we're bound by our honor system. We're not, like, even manhood would have to change, where we would have to be willing to be directly confrontational with women in public. That goes against a lot of the core rules of masculinity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I think that's where the rubber meets the road, because we all know there's no more women more confrontational than the ones that share our complexion when it comes to dealing with the men. And I think that's one of the biggest hurdles is that when we start talking about, because, you know, we address the panderers and people don't think we hold men accountable, but I'm like, I think we do more than our fair share in holding men accountable, because we talk about the ones that are wrecking the community by actually pandering and not necessarily, you know, addressing or confronting the narratives that have been placed out about us, confronting the way our image is being all bent and twisted and turned. The ones that'll say things like, that there's an intersectionality of manhood and things that are masculinity and so forth. We confront that and we stand on 10 toes, you know, 10 toes down. You know what I'm saying? It's a little inside joke. So I guess one of the things that I want to go into, because, you know, we only had, you know, about 50 minutes, you know, especially after watching the clip or checking out the clip, is what can be some of the ways we can counter this? I mean, I see a lot of brothers that are choosing to opt out of dealing with, you know, the women that's born on this particular piece of land, an American black woman, and that being their salvation. What are some ways that you brothers would speak to, you know, in terms of, like, addressing, because, like you said, you know, the women are the manufacturing plants in regards to distributors of you know, male prodigy. What I mean by that is they're the ones giving birth to all the children, and women are the first teachers of culture. So what do we do in terms of, like, addressing this? Because
I've seen places where we try to have like only boys only schools. They get shut down. Boys only programs. They get shut down. We can't even get a consistent rites of passage program going on in down the way. What can we do to sort of like right the ship? I see some things going on, some things happening. I'll speak on those. But what are some of the things that you brothers see that we can do?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, rock with the people that have the same vision, share the same sentiment, have the same goals. We're going to have to start small. Like, we can't look at it as if, like, how many people can we get? We're going to get what we get when we start. Because we know it ain't enough men out there. And until more men get produced, this is what it is. But also, I'm not going to argue with any dude that want to opt out of dealing with black men. But my question on the table for that, though, is that really the answer? Because how do we create healthier black families without black men and black women interacting with each other? So, once again, I'm not going to tell nobody what to do. I'm not going to argue with nobody about their decision and their ideology or whatever. But that question is on the table because at the end of the day, we do need healthy black families, and opting out does not help us get to that point. But I do think we start where we are. We build as we continue to build. We get with the men who are all on the same page, and we build and we create what we can create. And we just continue to go from there, because we got to realize, you know, at the end of the day, we are fighting to create a better future that we're not going to live to see. So,
okay.
Well, I think one of the things we can do is change the narrative that you spoke to, PC, about women being the first teachers of culture. I think those black men that are solid and honorable black men that actually hold the mantle of manhood need to get in there and start teaching culture, manhood culture. Because a lot of what's happening right now is men are being taught, boys are being taught how to be men from the perspective of women. And just listening to their talking points, half of them haven't really spent any significant amount of time thinking about the world from a man's lens. They're thinking about it from their own twisted lens, which is why you have so many twisted males growing up trying to be their mother's approximation of a man. I think men need to step in and become those first instructors for their children. Men need to step in and take control of the narratives by taking direct control of their children. Like, don't just let and I'm speaking to myself here as well. Don't just let the mother of your children dictate terms and dictate culture and dictate environment and spaces and times and durations for your child. Mm-hmm. Don't let her do that. And I don't even care if you're with a Hispanic woman, an Asian woman, or whatever, passport or whatever, no matter what type of woman you with, you should be the one instructing your child on what it means to be an adult in the community with black blood in you. And we know this works because we know that children raised in single fatherhood homes do much better than children raised in single motherhood homes. We also know that children raised in single father homes do about as well, not as well, but about as well as children raised in two-parent homes. We also know that children raised with solid male figures in the neighborhood also do better. So we have the data that suggests that when men just get involved, they create better spaces for every child in their vicinity. We just need to get more men involved. I'm not sure if checking out helps with that, because I agree with Joe. We need more black families. But at the same time, with the way things are right now, I can't be mad at no man to say, you know what, I'm good on all of that. I really can't. It's something I struggle with
right
from time to time, from being honest.
But, and that's why I say I'm not going to argue with anybody about that, because I'm not blind to what's actually going on. But even at the same time, men, we are going to have to do something to create some kind of tangible outcomes for ourselves to better our position and to help better the narratives that are spoken about us.
I think men, at the end of the day, are going to have to, unfortunately, brothers, y'all feel like your hands are full and you can't carry no more. You got to grow an extra hand and carry a little bit more.
Yep.
That's the truth of it. You got to grab these kids and you got to be a big brother or uncle or dad or whatever to these kids in the community. But don't do it in such a way where you're nothing but another form of discipline or utility for the kid's mom. If the kid's mom is pouring bullshit into the kid, you need to be man enough to tell the kid that your mom is pouring bullshit into you. Obviously, don't use those words. But, I mean, hell, if you have to, use those words. But even in that, confronting the negative messages and the negative propaganda everywhere you see it, especially when it involves children, because when you do that, you're also letting the kid know, one, that it's okay for you to push back on a woman. A woman is not infallible. She's not God. She's not all-knowing, all-seeing, and all-powerful. She's not omnipotent. So you're teaching the child that it is okay for you to have your own mind, your own thoughts, your own ideas. You're also teaching the child the limitations of the environment that they're in. We all know that his mama can't whoop your ass. She just gonna get mad, yell, and scream. That is powerful for a young boy to see. Because in a young boy's mind, he thinks his mom can beat up everybody. The earlier he see that my mom loves me, she got my best interest at heart most times, but she's also a human who can get her shit rocked like anybody else, and she understands this, and she's not going to be out here putting herself in harm's way. Like, even calling out the fact that she won't put herself in harm's way, but she'll put you in harm's way, brother. What does that mean to you, young man? How do you feel about that? Having those types of conversations where you restructure a child's perspective on the world. And anybody that would get mad at you doing that is somebody that I would question how serious they are about bettering the community. Because nobody's above reproach. We don't have no problem telling kids that daddies ain't shit. So why shouldn't we tell them that mamas ain't shit too?
Yep.
Well, these are all concepts that they seem to come to on their own. I mean, we have more young brothers looking outside and marrying outside the community at any other time in the history of America. And, you know, I think that they're starting to become diction now. They're starting to become a vocabulary. And shout out to, you know, Dr. Tiasan Johnson for helping aid and assist that. My good brother and elder, BGS Zipmore, who is also, you know, sort of like guiding and sort of being, they're able to not only define these terms, but actually show in terms of their reactions to, you know, real time conversations about the behaviors to that need to be addressed. I think that also we need to continue to, like I said, snatch these young brothers up, and sort of, you know, mentor. I don't like using the word mentor. I use the word, you know, become Jagna. But, you know, for those of you who don't know what Jagna is, be a mentor to these young brothers. But the simps can't be the one that slide in and do it. Because typically what happens is we start pushing things a certain direction. The people who want to be, of influence sort of like figure out a way to slither and slide in. And this is where we have to gatekeep. Now, unfortunately, you have to be strong and stand on it, because it's very easy for them to take that particular experience and demonize your image. It's very easy for somebody to become vindictive and then put you in harm's way. And as brothers, I think sometimes we don't necessarily stand with other brothers when they're facing those charges or facing those accusations or facing those particular that particular slander, because we don't want to have, we don't want to be seen as what we don't want to be. We want to distance ourselves from those things. We don't want that to stick to us. But I think we have to be stronger than that. And you know what I'm saying, as a brother that's been on the other side of that, you know, I could tell you, man, I've seen how fast people will distance themselves from you. But then, true to nature, though, I guess that actually does show you who's the man and who's the emasculated male. So, yeah, we got like 5 minutes to go, but you know, brothers, I want y'all. First, I want to thank y'all for pulling up, man, because you know this was kind of last minute, and I'm glad y'all you know y'all made some time. You know, I appreciate that. Both of you brothers are busy, you know, pulled all over the place. And then, you know, so I appreciate, you know, your time here. Any parting shots, brothers, you know, on this whole concept? Because at the end of the day, you know, we kind of all we got.
Males going to have to drop their nuts and become men. We need more men. We need more men produced out here. And we're going to need the women who don't agree with the foolishness to actually grow some nuts too and say something. Stand up. Talk. Like, push back on the narratives. Like, we have to make change and make change. Now we're already really, like, vastly behind the eight ball. So those who continue to say they care about what's really happening with black people and really want change and really not about the foolishness, where we're going to need some tangible actions that lead to tangible outcomes.
All right. Appreciate you, brother. Pat.
Yeah, I don't got nothing. Bring Shane back, punch dudes in the face, and learn dick discipline.
I agree with the Shane part. I agree with the Shane part. And I also, you know, and I also think that the brothers that walk away also, the brothers that step away, I think they also, that message is an indictment too. And it's powerful. We're seeing all over the country now, these mixers and these singles events, men ain't showing up. The brothers ain't showing up. I just saw one where they had one in a Christian ministry at a church, and it was singles night. And like, according to the woman that reported on it, she said that it was about 1,000 people in there, and there were no men.
Man, these women can go to hell with all that. You spent all these past couple of years telling men not to talk to you. Don't talk to you in public. Don't talk to me. You don't need no man. Don't talk to me. I don't need no man. Don't talk to me. I don't need no man. They listen. Duh.
And there you have it. Well, I want to thank you, brothers, tonight. You know, and like I said, y'all, I do my pre-records at night. So if I keep saying tonight, my apologies. But I want to thank you, brothers, for pulling up, man. You know, make sure y'all go check out On the Shoulders One. On the Shoulders One. Is it onthesouldersone.com, Joe?
You know it. OnTheShouldersOne.com is the website. On the Shoulders of Giants is the YouTube channel. On the Shoulders of Giants is just a platform on all social media platforms. And this On the Shoulders of Giants is the name on all social media platforms. So just check me out. On the Shoulders of Giants and On the Shoulders, the number one.com. So.
And y'all make sure y'all check out his store. He has his books in there. He has his merch in there. You know, make sure y'all pull up, man. Brothers, this is how we support each other. You know what I'm saying? You know, we also fraternize with one another financially. So, you know, make sure y'all pull up. And also, you know, Brother Pat, you know, is chairman of our nonprofit organization, PACS.org. So, Pat, tell them how they can check out the information and actually probably the biggest black database in terms of like research and information on the web.
Oh yeah, you can go to thepacs.org, www.thepacts.org. But don't go there if you a bitch.
Alright, y'all. And with that said, family, as I always say, y'all, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, out of here.